Good afternoon. My name is Sherelle, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Results Town Hall with Travis Smalley. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. Ms. Carter, you may begin your conference.
Thanks a lot, operator, and welcome everyone to this town hall conference call on the critical issue of ending poverty in America and what we can do individually and collectively to make this a priority and make it a reality. Thank you all for joining us. Tonight you're connected with people literally in dozens of communities across the U.S. I'm Joanne Carter, and I'm Executive Director of Results, a grassroots advocacy organization with volunteer chapters in over 100 U.S. cities, committed to ending poverty here in the U.S. and around the world by engaging with policymakers in the media and in our local communities to ensure that we push effective policies and investments that help people move out of poverty and stay out of poverty. And we're incredibly excited and honored to have Travis Smalley on this call tonight and to have the chance to work together on ending poverty in America. The Ending Poverty Initiative he's launched can be a catalyst for national attention and, more importantly, ambitious action to rekindle a war on poverty. So in just a moment, you'll hear from Travis Smalley and then from other powerful guests who are part of tonight's virtual town hall, author, lecturer, and political change leader Marianne Williamson, and advocate and community leader Angela Sutton from Witnesses to Hunger. Later in this call, there'll be an opportunity for a number of you on the call to ask a question or share an idea. So just as a reminder, in order to ask a question and get in the queue, you can hit star one and you'll get an operator who will register your question. And I just want to note, we'll try to get to as many questions as possible, but with such a wonderfully large crowd and a limited amount of time, not everyone's question will get asked. And if you're following us on Twitter, use the hashtag #TalkPoverty and help us spread the word on social media. So now it's really my pleasure to introduce Travis Smalley, who doesn't need much of an introduction, but I would just say that for us, we're really excited because he brings such enormous knowledge and insight and decades of commitment and leadership on addressing poverty and inequality. He's an influential and hugely popular broadcaster on PBS and on radio. He's the author of 16 books with a number of New York Times bestsellers, including his latest book, The Rich and the Rest of Us, The Poverty Manifesto. And equally importantly, he's an advocate and a thought leader on these critical issues. And we're thrilled to work with him because as an anti-poverty organization, I do believe that his Ending Poverty in America initiative can help reignite national attention at this key moment, dispel myths about poverty in this country, and drive concrete action toward eliminating poverty. And it's going to take all of our efforts and all of our individual courage leadership to make this happen. So, Travis, a big welcome, and thank you so much, and I'll turn this over to you.
First of all, Joanne, thank you for having me as a part of this, and I certainly want to start by thanking all the persons who have dialed in and who are dialing in even as I speak to this virtual town hall. I am constantly amazed at what technology allows us to do these days. I've just finished a book about Dr. King. It's called Death of a King, The Real Story of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s Final Years. So it's a book that really looks at the last year of King's life and how, as he tried to talk about poverty and organize this poor people's campaign, the whole nation turned against him. He talked about this triple threat, which I'll come back to in a moment, of racism, poverty, and militarism. King argued that if we didn't get serious about this triple threat facing the country of racism, poverty, and militarism, then the country was doomed. And the more Martin talked about racism and militarism and poverty, the more everything and everybody seemed to turn against him, particularly when he came out against the war in Vietnam. The government turns on him. The White House turns on him. The media turns on him. White folk turn on him. And, yes, even black folk turned on Dr. King. And so I was thinking just a few moments ago, listening to Joanne talk, about how much farther along Dr. King might have gotten in organizing his Poor People's Campaign had he had the opportunity to use technology in the way that we have. And so I believe that there's value in marching, there's value in protesting, there's value in hitting the streets, and yet there is so much value these days in taking advantage of what technology has to offer us. I want to thank again everybody for being on this call and taking advantage of what technology offers us to mobilize, to organize, and to strategize around this notion of eradicating poverty in the richest nation in the history of the world. Let me again thank Joanne and the wonderful people at Results for helping to organize this and really being the guiding force to make this conversation happen. I look forward to joining with Results at their conference on June 21st in Washington. I'll say more about that later. I know Joanne, certainly I hope she will, say more about this conference in Washington, this Results conference on June 21st in D.C. I'm excited about being there and excited about how we can continue to build this momentum. I believe that, you know, that movements happen rarely. It's a rare thing to create a movement. I've said many times that you start with a moment, you build some momentum, and hopefully it becomes a movement. Moment, momentum, and movement. And I sense that there's some momentum building in this country for a variety of reasons about this notion of income inequality and poverty and why poverty, as we argue in this book, The Rich and the Rest of Us, Dr. Cornel West and myself, argue in this book, The Rich and the Rest of Us, that poverty is now threatening our very democracy, that poverty is now a matter of national security. And I sense that as more of our fellow citizens wrestle with poverty, Susie Orman, my friend, once said there's a highway into poverty but barely a sidewalk out. And as more Americans get trapped into poverty, which I refer to as the new slavery, the more of our fellow citizens are starting to take this issue seriously. And in this election season, both the left and the right, I mean, some of these ideas are quite frankly bankrupt, but at least the left and the right now are trying to at least convince us that poverty is at the top of their docket. We can talk more about that, I suspect, in this hour, particularly with Mary Ann, who's running as independent for Congress. But I want to hear her thoughts about this, but I'm anxious to have a conversation about what we make of the fact that at least for the moment, in this critical midterm election year, the issue of income inequality and poverty seem to be raised a little bit higher on the docket than usual. So again, Joanne and the Results people, thank you for convening us. Mary Ann, I look forward to hearing from her later in this call. And certainly Angela and her work with Witness to Hunger, I want to hear what she has to say as well. And because I believe that part of what's wrong with our country is that we are too often engaged in monologue but not enough dialogue, I'm anxious later in this conversation, of course, to move beyond the monologue, to engage in some dialogue with those of you on the call in this virtual town hall for the last 15 minutes of our gathering. In the few minutes that I have left, let me just say a word about why this issue is so important to me. I'm a broadcaster. I'm not doing the heavy lifting and the righteous work that Joanne and the Results people are doing and Angela and Witness to Hunger and Mariana Chilton and Greg Kaufman, so many of my friends who I know are on this call and others, and certainly Marion Wright Edelman and the work of the Children's Defense Fund. There are all kinds of organizations, so I probably shouldn't call names, but there's so many poverty fighters who are really doing the heavy lifting and have done the heavy lifting on this issue for so long. But for so many years now, this issue has mattered to me, and I've tried to impact this issue from the vantage point, at least that I sit, the vantage point from where I sit, I should say, every day. I believe that public media, as many of you know, I am blessed to have platforms on both public television and public radio, and I believe that public TV and public radio are at their best when we are challenging people to reexamine the assumptions they hold, when we're helping them to expand their inventory of ideas, when we're exposing them to the stories of everyday people who are trying to make it against all the odds, when we use these platforms then to introduce Americans to each other so that we understand what we have in common and how, quite frankly, too many of us are struggling trying to make ends meet. And so I've been really aggressive over the last number of years about trying to push this issue of poverty higher up on the American agenda. How do we get this to be a real conversation? I can't recall in my lifetime a presidential campaign where there's been a real serious debate about the issue of poverty. Sadly, in those debates between Romney and Obama, we didn't have a real conversation about poverty. 4 years prior, between McCain and Obama, there was no real debate about poverty, even as the country was sliding into a recession. And so we can always have conversations about the middle class, and I tell folk all the time that the new poor are the former middle class. And so millions and millions of Americans now are struggling, trying to make ends meet. And so you have the perennially poor, you have the near poor, those who are just a paycheck or two away from being in poverty, and then you have the new poor, and the new poor, once again, are the former middle class. And so the time has come I believe, for us to get serious, particularly right about now, about doing something about eradicating poverty. When Barack Obama ran for president, he used that phrase. I mean, it's hard for some of us to imagine that and to believe that, but he used the phrase eradicating poverty. That was one of his platforms, one of his planks when he ran for president. I'm the first to tell you that he's had a serious headwind, a lot of obstructionism, but we have not had the kind of searing focus in this administration or any prior back to Lyndon Johnson as we celebrate now, commemorate 50 years since the war on poverty. If we're going to tell the truth, I don't believe we can advance this issue of eradicating poverty in America if we're not prepared to tell the truth, the unsettling, the unhousing, the uncomfortable, inconvenient truths that need to be told about so many millions of fellow citizens who are wrestling, struggling, again, trying to make something out of nothing. And so it's time, it seems to me, 50 years after the war on poverty, as Joanne intimated a moment ago, for us to renew our focus, to renew our energy, and to be more rigorous and more vigorous and more committed to trying to do something about this issue, once again, that threatens our very democracy. I think most of you know that that the federal government defined in 2012 an annual income of just over $23,000 for a family of four as the poverty line. I don't think anybody in their right mind believes that a family of four could live off of that amount of money. We if we're going to tell more truth about this, Bill Clinton, I love him, did a great job as president in a lot of arenas. But when they engaged this, what they call welfare reform, I called it welfare deform, it might have been well-intentioned, but when we cut away the social safety net and forced people to try to find work, I'm all for finding work. But when you move away, tear away the social safety net, when there are no jobs for these women particularly to go to, then women and children, as a result of this welfare deform, end up being the group of Americans who are falling fastest into poverty. That is our reality. What kind of nation are we when we allow women and children, oftentimes the most weak and vulnerable, to fall into poverty faster than anyone else? That's just un-American as far as I am concerned. And so from the media platforms that I have access to, I've tried to force a conversation about why we can't get more coverage, more focus on the issue of poverty. I only have a few minutes left, and I want to turn it back to Joanne to introduce the next speaker. But in the 3 minutes that I have left, it is not lost on me today, not lost on any of you today, that the NBA finally came out today to make a statement about the story that everybody's been talking about for the last few days. I am sitting as we speak in the city of Los Angeles, where I live and work. And in this town, it has been, you know, subject number one, as it has been across the nation, a subject so significant that Barack Obama, while on his Asia trip, had to comment about the comments made by Donald Sterling, the owner of the L.A. Clippers, these racist, nasty, ugly, vitriolic comments about African-Americans and beyond. So the NBA today, in case you haven't heard, I'm sure you all have by now, we're all on social media, the NBA announced today a lifetime ban for Don Sterling, with regard to his work with his ownership of the Clippers and his involvement in the NBA, a lifetime ban. Now, what's fascinating about that, and why do I raise that in a conversation about eradicating poverty? Look at all the traction this issue received just over the last few days. Everywhere you looked, everywhere you turned, every moment of the day, every hour of the day since this story broke, we've had nothing but breaking news about Don Sterling and the Los Angeles Clippers. And yet, nobody's life was at stake because of what he said. I find his comments to be abhorrent. But nobody's life was at stake. But look at the traction that issue received. Where poverty is concerned, people's lives are being lost. People's livelihoods are being lost. Wealth has been destroyed because of this recession. People, against all the odds, can't seem to get their lives back on track. As I said earlier, it's threatening our very democracy. It's a matter of national security. This gap between the have-gots and the have-nots cannot continue to widen. And yet, look at all the traction this story has received. So Dr. King was right, back to that triple threat: racism, poverty, and militarism. every now and then for the right story, Trayvon Martin, Donald Sterling, I don't put them in the same boat, but they're stories that had race at the epicenter of them, we can get some traction on a racial conversation. But no conversation at all, really, about militarism, and precious little conversation about poverty. Let me close with a couple stats that you might find interesting. The media coverage in this country of certain topics breaks down like this. 16% of our coverage is about politics. 4% of media coverage is on business. 1.4% on immigration, so it's getting some traction, if you call 1.4% traction. 1.2% on education. 0.06% of our media coverage is on science. I won't even tell you what percent of our media coverage is on entertainment. You can guess. But poverty, 0.02%. I repeat, 0.02% of national media coverage is about the issue of poverty. What are those who are on this call, those of us who care about this country, who care about fellow citizens, what are we going to do to force this issue on the American agenda, to force elected officials and other thought leaders, opinion makers, and influencers to take this issue seriously so that we don't lose our democracy? No empire in the history of the world has not at some point faltered or failed. This country is going to implode one day under the weight of its own poverty if we don't start to take this issue more seriously. And that's what our work at Ending Poverty, America's Silent Spaces, is all about. Given more time during the Q&A, we can talk more about that. Perhaps I can answer more questions specifically about the work that we're trying to do. But, Joanne, I hope that at least offers us something to masticate on as we continue this conversation. I thank you for the opportunity to say a few words.
Thank you, Tavis, so much. And thank you for using your powerful voice, really for making this, you know, for driving to make this a priority, for driving this up from 0.2%. But I think that the people that you can reach and that we can reach together, that's really the moment that we have here. And I want to just take a couple of minutes and just talk about results, which is a little bit more also about the sum of the what we can do and what ordinary people can and are doing. And that for those of you that are new to Results, we're a grassroots advocacy organization that trains and supports people in over 100 U.S. communities all over the U.S. to become powerful advocates for the end of poverty in this country and around the world, and for the very reasons that Tavis just spoke so eloquently about. And Results is not just about taking one-time action. We equip people with the advocacy skills to become real agents of change. And we know absolutely that we need to work together to make ending poverty an election issue. But in Results, we've also learned that voting is not the end point in the political process. It's just a start. And that with information and support, each of us can use our position as constituents to have a major impact on members of Congress by meeting with members directly to ask them to support programs and policies that work to reduce poverty, by being in touch with their aides in Washington, by getting letters to the editor, by getting that word out in the media and the reality out in the media, in local newspapers and communities, by educating and engaging other folks in our communities on these issues. And at times, members of Congress get, as we know, enormous pressure to cut programs that work to reduce poverty and hunger in America, and they also get enormous amounts of misinformation. But too often, they don't hear from folks back home who care about these issues. And frankly, there are some issues that are just dying for lack of attention, where there might not even be opposition, but just nobody is making them a priority, nobody is championing them. And I live in Washington, so D.C., so I deeply understand the power of money in politics, but I also know that we have this huge, often untapped power to influence the political process that most of us are not using. There was a survey of congressional staff that were asked asked anonymously, you know, how do you influence their bosses? And they said that the single most important influential action to impact members of Congress was a visit from constituents. And 97% of them agreed that this had high impact. And that's really you folks on the phone that we're talking about, and that's the power that we have and we're only sometimes using. And I would just say that Results works on specific practical solutions to poverty. So And I look forward to having more of a conversation about that. But here in the U.S., that means supporting programs like the Earned Income Tax Credit and the Child Tax Credit, which are second only to Social Security in moving people out of poverty and helping them make ends meet. It means protecting critical programs for children and families such as SNAP, formerly food stamps, the Head Start program and Early Head Start, and Medicaid. And it also means looking forward to enacting policies that help low-income Americans build savings and assets, one of the surest ways to break the cycle of poverty. You know, last year, the president of the World Bank, Dr. Jim Kim, launched a goal to eradicate extreme poverty on the planet by 2030. And I just feel if the world can coalesce around a goal to eradicate extreme poverty in the world, that we can also come together around a goal to end poverty in this country and even align our efforts with this broader global movement. And this year at our annual results conference in Washington, D.C., we'll gather some 500 activists and partners from around the country and around the world who are going to have over 300 meetings with Congress. And we're really also honored that Tavis Smiley is going to join us on the opening day of our conference on June 21st. And I'll just end by saying that one of our biggest priorities and most important lessons we've learned in results is the power of voices and the experience of people who are living in poverty or who have lived in poverty. People who can speak directly from experience make issues of poverty real to policymakers and the media, dispel myths about poverty in America, and be the leading edge of change. So it's now my privilege to introduce Angela Sutton, who is a leader from Witnesses to Hunger. And Witnesses to Hunger is a research and advocacy project partnering with the real experts on hunger, mothers and caregivers of young children who've experienced hunger and poverty in this country. Angela was at our results conference in Washington last year, and she spoke to all of us just as we were getting ready to head off for hundreds of meetings with members of Congress. And she was amazingly powerful in telling her own story of challenges living in poverty and then the struggle to make a better life for her children and for herself. And Angela is using her experience and leadership to facilitate a support group for mothers that participate in programs at the Center for a Hunger-Free Community. And her unique story was actually captured on ABC Nightly News with Diane Sawyer. So, Angela, welcome, and I want to turn it over to you. Angela, are you on the call? You may be on mute. Operator, offline check Angela's line. And Angela, we can, if we don't hear from you in a second, we can come back to you because we really want to hear from you particularly.
And we are checking for Angela right now.
Okay.
Her line is connected.
Thanks very much. And I'm going to go ahead and introduce our last but by no means least speaker. And then we'll come back to Angela. It's my deep honor to introduce Marianne Williamson. Marianne is an internationally acclaimed author and lecturer and also a powerful activist. Her books have influenced and inspired tens of millions of people. 6 of her 10 published books have been New York Times bestsellers and 4 have been number one bestsellers. And Results is really proud that Marianne's been a board member and advisor for many years. She has a remarkable ability to see what is needed on the national and global agenda and to speak with inspiration, honesty, and deep clarity in a way that moves people and moves that agenda. Her blogs and writing on politics and policy and spirituality are followed by hundreds of thousands of people. In 2006, a Newsweek magazine poll named her one of the 50 most influential baby boomers. And as Tavis Smiley noted, she is now running for Congress this year in the LA area. So, Marianne, welcome, and it's a thrill to have you on this call.
Oh, it's a thrill to be with you. It's just a wonderful call, and it's an honor to do anything with you, Joanne, with Ken, with anything with Results, and also, of course, Tavis Smiley. It's just great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
And Marianne, we'd love to hear just a little bit from you about your perspective on poverty in America. You've spoken really powerfully on these issues and on the change that needs to happen to make an end of poverty in this country possible.
Well, you know, it's interesting about the American people. There's a characterological facet. As individuals, we're very caring people. Martin Luther King once said that the American people are far more compassionate than the U.S. government. As individuals, we are compassionate. If we see one poor child, we're upset about it. But we go into a different place as a group. We are too easily manipulated these days as a nation, as a group, because so many images in mass media and so forth can be used to disconnect us emotionally from the things which otherwise we would care about very, very much. So I don't think that the average American really recognizes, really understands that among all advanced nations of the world, we have the second highest child poverty rate in the world, second only to Romania. I don't think the average American recognizes that one in five American children live in poverty. One in five American children are food insecure, that a lot of these obese children are actually malnourished and so forth. And that's why I am so grateful and so honored to be involved with Results, because I think so many times in America, when we do understand a problem, we go into this hopeless place, and that's what I love about Results, where you can feel, if I join that organization, I am actually part of a practical lobbying effort that will be on top of every possible legislative initiative which could make a difference and which I can actually influence by my own lobbying and by my getting my friends to help me to lobby. So, listen, I think it's not just what we do for Results. It's what Results does for all of us. And I think there are many of us. I think particularly today, I think that there are millions of Americans who realize that this country is moving in the wrong direction. We're moving in a direction by which we are consistently siphoning off large portions of our material resources into the hands of a very few people. It's unethical, it's undemocratic, it's unsustainable. But most importantly, it causes huge amounts of unnecessary human suffering. And to me, that's the human scale that I love so much about Results. It addresses real human suffering in practical ways so that people don't just have to whine, don't just have to complain, don't just have to feel desperate, but can actually make a difference. So I'm just thrilled that you exist and always happy to be part of whatever Results is doing.
Thanks, Marianne, and thanks for all of your leadership as well on raising these issues in the country and in the world and being such a powerful voice. And now I think we do have Angela Sutton on the line. So, Angela, we'd love to hear a few words from you as well. And I just want to remind folks before Angela speaks that if you do have a question or want to ask a question or make a comment, you can hit star one and the operator will pull you off and take your question. So, Angela, welcome, and please go ahead.
Thank you for having me. Can you hear me?
We can, Angela. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank God. Okay, first let me thank Results and Joanne for having me. I'm so humbly honored to be a part of this. And thank you, Tavis Smiley, for taking time out to fight against hunger. It's really greatly appreciated for everybody that is suffering in poverty today that we're now starting to, like you said, have a moment, and that hopefully we'll have a movement soon from it. My job today is just to give people an idea of what hunger is and also to help have people be held accountable for poverty. I mean, like speaking off of what Patrick was saying, he was talking about how they're talking about the Clippers, his racial statement that he made through a phone conversation. It just went all across nationwide. It spread it like a virus. However, nobody wants to talk about hunger and poverty and welfare reform and low income, and people are just really are suffering in America. So my job really today is just to get to break the cycle of poverty, but bridge the gap between the people that make the decisions and the people that are living in poverty firsthand. Hello?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much. Thanks so much, Angela. And it would be great to just even hear a word or two about just the work that Witnesses to Hunger is doing. Maybe you could just tell us in a few sentences some of the work that Witnesses to Hunger is doing to directly, not only directly fight these things, but directly engage people living in poverty to speak about these issues and to be powerful leaders as you are.
Well, what we do at Witnesses to Hunger, we take men and women that are living in poverty, that have children, and what we do is we be a voice for people that don't have a voice. We go to legislators, to policymakers, and we try to get them to hear us as a unit, as a voice, and try to be there when they're making the policy changes and to say what works and what doesn't work. We give them a story. We give them a face. We give them pictures of our lifestyle and what we're living every day to the numbers and the research that they're doing, because some of them have no clue on what it is to live in poverty. So what we try to do is get them to understand firsthand what poverty really is and give them a face, because with the stereotypes and the stigmatisms on what poverty is, they're clueless firsthand on what poverty and food insecurity is. So that's what we do as witnesses. We're an organization that comes together to try to just get them to understand that they're not being held accountable, that things are not working, and the things that are working, you cannot be cutting them because they're working. So that's what we do as an organization. We just try to empower the people that are in poverty and give them voices so they can make a decision in the policies that's being cut or the policies that's not working, and to be able to inform legislators of that.
Thanks so much, Angela. And it was, I really got a chance to see how powerful that was when you were at our conference last year, both, frankly, giving a rousing kickoff speech to everybody, to hundreds of other people that were going to visit with members of Congress, but also really reminding them of the reality of poverty in America and getting us a little bit out of our heads and into our hearts about this, and really remembering what this is about. And we have to fight this together. So thanks very much.
And now,
I'll just remind folks again that to ask a question, hit *1. And we are taking some questions, but you can still get in the queue with a question. So hit *1, and the operator will come on to take your question. But, operator, can we go ahead and take the first question?
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1. Again, that is *1. We'll pause for just a moment.
Yeah, and operator, if you want to take the first question that I think you guys have perhaps in the queue, that would be great.
And again, if you would like to ask a question, press *1.
Great. Hi, everyone. This is Meredith Dodson from Results, and I wanted to start off our questions by actually relaying a really great question we got via Twitter. And the question, and all of our speakers can answer this, of course, but especially for Tavis and Joanne, is how can I get involved with Results and the Ending Poverty Initiative?
Joanne, do you want to take the first?
I can get started. So, with Results, you can. We have chapters in over 100 U.S. cities. So there are local folks to link up with. To find out more about Results, just go to our website, which is www.results.org. That will tell you a lot about us and how you can contact folks. But again, we have chapters in over 100 U.S. cities. And for those of you that really want to jump in with both feet and get the training to become an advocate and really understand how to powerfully work on these issues, we have our annual international conference happening in Washington, D.C., June 21st through 24th, with Tavis Smiley as part of our kickoff day. And we would love to have you join us in Washington, D.C. as well to be part of that international conference.
With regard to how you can get involved in Ending Poverty, America's Silent Spaces, our website is tavistalks.com/endingpoverty, tavistalks.com/endingpoverty to read and learn more about it. But we are kicking off our efforts this summer. The first stop, this is a virtual town hall. We will be doing some actual town halls, literally from California to the Carolinas, for the next 4 years. This Ending Poverty campaign is a four-year campaign. So for the next 4 years, we're going to be crisscrossing the country in town halls in big cities and small towns, bringing together regional thought leaders, opinion makers, influencers, stakeholders, everybody who cares about this issue, bringing them together in spaces and places across the country and connecting them one to each other, but also forcing the media in these regional areas to come and to hear these stories, to get involved, and to push this issue, as I said earlier, higher up on the regional and on the national agenda. So we're talking about raising awareness. We're talking about identifying and removing barriers, large and small. We're talking about advocating for policy changes that strengthen the effectiveness of certain programs. We, of course, are talking about supporting legislation that address the root causes of poverty. And we welcome you to join us on the road, to get involved with us. We're trying to recruit poverty fighters all across the country. There's so much more that we're doing through this Ending Poverty, America's Silent Spaces initiative that I won't belabor now. But you can read about it, again, by going to our website at TavishTalks.com/Ending Poverty to hear more about the work that we're doing. We've done a number of iterations of this poverty tour, but this one is the most in-depth, the most aggressive and progressive effort that we've done for some years now at doing this work, and we'd love to have you be a part of it. But that's how you can learn more about it, and hopefully we'll see you on the road as we travel the country for the next 4 years, again, trying to make this issue, the eradication of poverty, a priority. But again, I'll be in Washington as well on June 21st. Even before I kick off my poverty tour, I'll start with results in Washington on June 21.
And Tavis, I would just say also that we're, as I said earlier, we're really excited about figuring out, partnering with you ongoingly on this poverty tour, because I think the spaces that you'll be creating are spaces where we can actually bring our results folks, work on local media, and again, drive the same issues with Congress and with the media to make this a priority. So I think it's a really exciting partnership in supporting the work that you're doing on this Ending Poverty agenda. And I really believe that we can galvanize support for reigniting this war on poverty and for a goal that is really embraced nationally on ending poverty in America. If we can do this for the world, as you said, we can do this for the richest country in the world.
Operator, next question.
Hi, this is Paula from the Tavis Smiley Foundation. We have a question that came in from Twitter. The question is that media coverage about poverty seems completely about political agendas of candidates. How do we get the true stories like Angela's told?
This is Tavis. I'll take a stab at that first. I think given that I'm in the media, of course, for a living, this is exactly what I was saying earlier about how we have to force these stories into the faces of these persons who have these media platforms. The reality is that it is still the case that that he who screams or jumps up and down the loudest gets the attention. And I, for the life of me, can't understand why, you know, so many millions of our fellow citizens could be trying to endure these conditions, and yet the stories don't get the kind of attention or traction that they need. And that's because those of us who are on this call doing this kind of work, you've got to shake the trees, we've got to beat the drums, pick your metaphor, but we have to make this issue a priority for them. And the good news about the world in which we live today is that we have so much control, we have so much authority in many ways over that by using things like social media. I go back to where this conversation started about the value of social media, the value of technology that we are taking advantage of today in this conversation. But we're gathered here in this space, and when we leave this space, these are the kinds of messages, the kinds of stories like Angela's and others that we have to continue to push out. And we have to challenge media outlets to cover these stories. We have to get back to writing letters to editors. We have to get back to making sure that at the local level, somebody once said that all politics is local, and they're right about that. But at the local level, we need to make sure that we are leaving no stone unturned, forcing these old school media platforms to take these issues seriously. That's one of the reasons why this Ending Poverty America Silent Spaces tour is so important for me, because we get a chance to crisscross the country for 4 years to really just, you know, to beat the drum in these regional centers around the nation, letting people know that this issue deserves more attention. I mean, there's no reason, as I said earlier in this call for those who might have jumped on late, there's no reason that we should go through another presidential election cycle where the issue of poverty just does not get to the top of the agenda. I just don't get that. And in this election season, again, to repeat myself, at least at the moment it seems, even if some of these ideas are bankrupt, that the issue of income inequality and poverty is on the docket. Now, the question is, how do we you know, organize our compelling strength in a way that forces this issue to the top of the campaign agenda and tries to force a real conversation about some ideas that are actually doable. So I think, again, the heavy lifting is always going to be about us. Change never works from the top down. It's always from the bottom up. We've got to organize. We've got to mobilize. But it begins with those of us who, again, care about our country, who care about fellow citizens, who are willing to do anything and everything to make sure that these stories get told.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much, Tavis. Anyone else want to add to that?
This is Angela. I also want to add on to that. That's what we do at Witnesses. We tell our stories because a lot of people don't want to listen. So we go to Congress. We tell everybody that is willing to listen. We, like you said, beat the drum. We will talk until we can't talk no more. We will keep writing our congresspeople, our senators. We try to get everybody to hear this story. We talk to the media. We talk to people like Tavis Smiley. We try to get the story out there because there's no way that you can have a heart and hear that people are suffering in your backyard and you're not being held accountable. I feel like we are their bosses, but they're not listening to us and we're not firing them. We're not holding nobody accountable. So what we're trying to do is get everybody's attention. And anybody, whether it be the newspaper, Twitter, Facebook, IG, we're hitting everything, any media circuit that we can find. We're trying to get the word out there. And that's how you can help as well. Get the word out there. Tell people. Have us come and talk to people. Get people that you know are experiencing poverty firsthand out there to testify. So that way we can hold these legislators accountable for where poverty is today, because they're not doing nothing about it.
Thanks, Angela. And I would also just say, you know, we've learned again in the same way that we don't use our power often to reach members of Congress. We're really not using our power to do exactly what Tavis talked about and you talked about, Angela, to get these issues in the newspaper, the letters to the editor that our results folks write and the training that people get to be able to do that, the meetings with editorial boards, you know, and bringing in people who are directly affected by poverty in communities to talk with editorial boards and to write op-eds, you know, is both about kind of getting more attention on that conversation, but again, dispelling and killing some of the myths about poverty that we have in this country that keep us trapped and also keep us divided.
You know, and if I can add just very quickly here, I raised this issue when we were together for this conference in Washington some weeks ago, and I want to raise it once again. For those on this call who are doing organizational work, I want to encourage you, if you don't already have one or some, you should not be doing the work that you're doing without media partners. Whatever part of the nation you are headquartered in, you ought to make sure that locally, and if you're doing national work, then this is obviously true, you know, nationally as well, but you ought not be doing the work that you're doing without some media partners. And whether we're talking local newspapers, we're talking, you know, all these outlets, radio, television, print, there's so many outlets now, and all of these outlets are driven by content. Now, none of this stuff is easy. I mean, let's face it, poverty is not a sexy subject. This is not an easy subject to get attention on. You know, this isn't sports. It's not music. It's not entertainment. We know what we've signed up for. We walked into this work with our eyes wide open. And so we're clear about what the uphill struggle here is. But it just seems to me that every one of us who is doing this work ought to be connected with some kind of media partner. So you beat them up. You bully them. You do whatever you have to do by any means necessary to make sure that you have media partners that are helping you push out the work that you are doing. And I just want to encourage people to, you know, if that's not something you already have in place and you're specifically doing organizational work, you need to make sure you have media partners. I don't do anything on the issue of poverty. All of my poverty work starts with having some media partners locally and nationally. We don't go out on any kind of tour to do any kind of work without somebody that's going to help us push out the message about what we're trying to do. And they all need content. You just have to convince them that your content is worthy of being pushed out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much on that. And it's also one of the most powerful ways to influence Congress. So there's the direct influence of sitting down and meeting face-to-face with folks, and there's a huge influence that the media has on Congress as well, so hugely important. Would love to take a next question, operator.
Paula, this is the operator. Do you have a next question?
Sorry. This next question comes in from someone via Twitter. The question is, how is the Ending Poverty Initiative and results, how are they working with educators to address the issue of poverty?
I'll let you go first again, Joanne. I'll come behind you.
So I would say that amongst a number of different things. Among our results partners, some of the strongest folks that we work with are our education leaders within results. And so we're working with those folks to actually bring these issues to schools and to their communities. A number of the issues that we've worked on, particularly domestically, also include a real focus on preschool. And Head Start and ensuring that kids actually can start school ready to learn. And Tavis, I'd turn it over to you for...
Sure. When we first started our work, this poverty work, years ago, one of our early partners in this effort was the NEA, the National Education Association. And our partner now on the tour that we just announced, this Ending Poverty America Silent Spaces campaign for the next 4 years, one of our major title sponsors is the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, headed by Randy Weingarten. And, again, I have never done poverty work without connecting to educators, because anyone with half a brain understands the link between education or miseducation, or put another way, the lack of education and poverty. There aren't many things that Republicans and Democrats agree on in Washington, certainly on the issue of poverty. A lot of ideas floating around, as I said earlier, some of them are just completely bankrupt. And yet, the one thing that even the left and the right agree on is the link between education and poverty. If you have a high-quality education, the chances are greater that you won't be in poverty. If you end up with without having access to an equal high-quality education, chances are greater that you're going to be in poverty. So nobody debates that reality. The data is very clear on that reality. So it seems to me that you can't do real poverty work if you aren't going to be connected to education and to educators, those who know what you're up against. In this book, The Rich and the Rest of Us, that I co-authored with Dr. West, I referenced earlier in this conversation the fact that too many women and children are falling faster into poverty than anybody else. And so if we can't do something about all of the issues that we know that children face so early on in their life, that link education and poverty, then the nation is doomed anyway. I said so many times that too many young people in this country end up surrendering their life's chances before they ever know their life's choices. That's the condition and the situation that we put too many young people in. So, again, the link between education and poverty is well established, and it just seems to me that if we're not, you know, connecting those dots, then we're not really serious about the work that we're doing on poverty. We have to make children a priority. We have to make sure they have high-quality educations. We have to make sure that they get, you know, preschooled. That's a no-brainer. We have to make sure that they get that women get early prenatal care. I mean, all of these, again, the data on this is so abundant and clear, I kind of feel silly just saying stuff that I know that we all know. But the link is real, and we have to take that link seriously.
And Tavis, I would just add, you know, on that, as you said, that whole issue of making sure that kids are enter school ready to learn. So with things like preschool and all of the comprehensive services that are a part of that are so key, the nutrition and the
yes,
healthcare, and it's a total no-brainer. But yet, you know, early Head Start, just a tiny fraction of the kids that could be in there are there getting that chance. So we got to keep saying it, and it's worth repeating. The one other thing I would say is that while we're talking about ending poverty in America, Results also works on global poverty issues, and we all, for the same reason we know, you know, mothers that are dying of AIDS, the thing they most wanted was not AIDS treatment before it was available. It was to make sure that they could get their kids into school and those kids could stay in school. You know, parents everywhere in the world, it is the most important thing that they want. is a quality education for their kids to move them out of poverty. And one of the other ways I would just say that we pair with educators is we house in our organization something called the Global Campaign for Education US. So we've been supporting that important project, and one of the things they do is an education for all plan, working with folks in the NEA and the AFT to actually create a plan that teachers can use to actually educate kids about education for children in the rest of the world, so kind of making us all global citizens as well. Operator, we'd love to, or others, we'd love to hear the next question, either for someone who's on the line or if we're getting it by Twitter, we'd love to hear the next question.
Paula, you can go ahead with your next question.
Okay, we have a call in the queue from Charlie from Albuquerque. There was a study published recently by Princeton about how the voice of people doesn't have much influence. How do we square that with the notion that our voices can have influence?
There is the Negro National Anthem, the Black National Anthem. For those who didn't know that there's a Black National Anthem, there is. It was written many, many years ago by two brilliant Americans, two wonderful Americans. The great poet, the great Black poet James Weldon Johnson wrote the words. His brother, J. Rosamond Johnson, wrote the music. And the song you may have heard, if you've ever been to an African-American gathering, certainly during Black History Month, you've heard the song sung, lift every voice and sing. And I come to that so often because every one of us does, in fact, have a voice. And I sometimes sense that people don't want us to use those voices. They don't want us to raise those voices, because they don't want us to be heard. And so it becomes a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy when people think that they have no voice, that they have no power, that they have no agency. That's in many regards, I think, what people in Washington want. That's what the lobbyists want. That's what the powerful and the rich and the lucky and the elite, that's what they want, for us to think that we do not have voices, that we, again, don't have any agency. And at the end of the day, if we buy that canard, then we're going to stay, you know, right where we are. We're going to stay stuck on stupid. You know, somebody once said that insanity is doing the same thing the same way and expecting a different result. Well, for too long, we've tried this notion of being silent and not raising our voices, and I think it's time to try something a little bit different. Hence, I go back to this point of moment and momentum and movement. We do, in fact, have agency here. But we have got to make sure that we organize, that we mobilize, that we use our voices. I want to be clear. The one thing that I'm abundantly aware of, Joanne and Angela and others and Marianne, is that poor people, those who are struggling, don't need us to speak for them. I can't speak for anybody else, but as a broadcaster, what I've tried to do is to provide a platform through public television and public radio. And with these tours, this Ending Poverty, America's Silent Spaces effort for the next 4 years, and the work that I've done here before, and the book, The Rich and the Rest of Us, all the work that I've tried to engage in is about creating a platform so that these fellow citizens can tell their own story. They don't need me to speak for them. They need a microphone in their face, a camera in their face, a platform on which they can tell their story, number one. You got to provide for them a platform. But they don't need to be, you know, they don't need me to speak for them. They can speak for themselves if they are given an opportunity. And so all I've tried to do is to provide a platform for them to express themselves. And I think the more we do that, the more those of us who are doing this work identify these fellow citizens who have a story to tell, provide a platform for them to tell their story, I believe that their voices will, in fact, be heard. And at the end of the day, the reason why I said earlier, let me just unpack this, the reason why I said earlier that poverty is threatening our very democracy is because 1% of the people cannot continue to own and control 42% of the wealth. The top 400 richest Americans cannot continue to have wealth equivalent to the bottom 150 million Americans. Those numbers, that reality in a democracy is not sustainable. And so clearly there are enough of us who are struggling in poverty. There just aren't enough people who have provided platforms and opportunities for these people to tell their stories about what they're dealing with. And furthermore, there are people who are doing some righteous work. There are some solutions that are working. We've got to tell those stories and scale those programs up as well. So anybody that tells you you don't have a voice is deliberately trying to make sure that you don't exercise your agency, and we got to push back on that every chance we get.
Thanks so much, Tavis. I always tell people that, you know, one of the other things that we can do is just, you know, is get a copy of Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States and read the true history, because we're, as you said, we're told so often, in fact, that we can't influence change, when in fact it's been people all along that have done that, and most of us don't use our voices. So really part of so much of what Results does is that it trains and then ongoingly supports people to use their voices. And just one very, very quick story I just want to tell of one of our Results grassroots leaders who I hope is on the call tonight, listening out there, but a woman named Lene Havens from Albuquerque Results, and also with an organization called Circles. And she came to our conference for the first time last year. She's a single mom living in poverty, working, going to college. She's a college student. She came to our conference from Albuquerque, met with every congressional office from New Mexico, told her story, and talked about the reality of poverty in America and about why we can't cut the SNAP, the food stamp program. And her member of Congress, Michelle Lujan Grisham, was so moved by her story that she actually told that story on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives to argue against cuts in SNAP, and Lene is in the congressional record. So if we use our voices, we will be heard, and we might even end up in the congressional record.
I want to comment on it, Joanne. I don't have a problem with our testimonies being put in front of Congress. I have a problem with the people not being able to tell their own story in Congress. We all have a voice. And like Mrs. Smiley said, we need the platform to voice to tell our story so they can hear our voice. The problem is the government don't want to hear our voice. So what they try to do is shut off the media, don't give no publicity to poverty because they don't want to deal with poverty firsthand. This is an epidemic, it's an issue, and it needs to be addressed. And once they get the opportunity, the people that are living in poverty every day, it will make a change because they will hear the voice. But the problem is the media don't want to assist. The government tries to lock everything down. Don't nobody want to be held accountable for it. But again, America's only strong as its weakest link. And if the poverty people don't get out of poverty, America is sure to die and be in doom.
Thanks, Angela, and thanks for the work that you're doing to bring the stories of your own story and other people's stories to Congress, to the media, and to the world. I'm conscious that we're almost at time, so I guess I want to maybe just ask our speakers, ask Tavis, if there's anything that you'd like to end with. We'd love to hear just kind of any last thoughts that you have and ways that we can continue to work together.
I want to close by thanking you, Joanne, and again, the wonderful people at Results, your entire team, for doing the heavy lifting again that you all are doing to raise the issue of poverty higher on the American agenda and to get serious about making it a priority and eradicating it. There's no reason in the world why the richest nation in the history of the world should be a nation with so many people who are falling into poverty and, quite frankly, just don't have a way to get out. And so I thank you for the work that you're doing. I want to thank Mary Ann for being on the call. I want to thank Angela for being on the call, for the work that they're doing. Witness to Hunger is a wonderful program, and I'm always honored to be in proximity to them. I want to thank the callers, everybody who called in tonight to be a part of this. You show by your presence and your participation in this virtual town hall that you care about this issue, and again, that you care about our democracy. This is not about us versus them. This is not about we and they. We are all in this together. Our democracy is in trouble. It's going to implode under its own weight. These numbers are not sustainable if we can't find and create opportunities for the majority of our citizens to have not a minimum wage job, but a living wage job. Finally, I'll close with the words of Dr. King, who I referenced earlier in this conversation tonight. King put it this way: cowardice asks, is it safe? Expediency asks, is it politic? Vanity asks, is it popular? But conscience asks, is it right? And every now and then we must take positions that are neither safe, politic, comfortable, or convenient, but we do it because our conscience tells us that it's right. If our collective and individual consciences are not telling us in this moment that what we are doing to eradicate poverty in this nation is right, then God help us and God save us all. This is the right thing for us to be doing at this moment. Now is the time for us to be doing it. We've got to move from moment to momentum to movement, and ain't nobody going to do it but us. If not us, then who? If not here, then where? If not now, then when? We got to all be in this fight together, and I thank you, Joanne.
Thank you so much, Tavis, and thank you to our other speakers for being with us tonight. I would say that it's very clear that there are big challenges, but we actually know so much of what works. We actually know what works. We have proof that it works, and we have so much more power with our voices than we know or than we take advantage of. And I think working collectively, we are at this incredibly important and precious moment where we can really reignite this. And I look forward to working with all of you for our speakers tonight and with all of you on the call to actually reignite this movement to end poverty in this country. So thanks to all of you, and thanks to everyone for being with us tonight.
Thank you very much, and good night.
Thank you. Good night.
This does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.